Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now the time to do the right now. Thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
I just want to definitely say welcome. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are here to connect the struggles across this country and even across the globe for those folks who are fighting for democracy, fighting for justice, fighting for dignity. And so we have two special guests today. But I do want to say last week we had Alam Jaber, who is of Lebanese descent, and she's been on the show a couple of times before talking about the Palestinian situation. And it was pretty intense because we see that there is a intensification of what's going on in Gaza. And just last week, the U.S. sent advanced missile defense systems to Israel with about 100 troops to help them do that, while at the same time calling for Israel to be humane and do something about the humanitarian crisis. Now, this is clearly the government talking up at both sides of its mouth. You can't be sending additional weaponry and then asking that government to be humane. It just does not make sense. So if you missed that episode, please go to the website, JamalaRogers.com, and pick that up. And there's a couple other ones about what's going on in Palestine if you don't know exactly the issues there. But, you know, one of the things that we decided last week is that, you know, the ceasefire calling for that is totally inadequate. We need to stop the money that's going to Israel. That's how that's how they're able to do all of this, because this government keeps sending our tax dollars over there to kill people. And so we got to say no, y'all. We just got to say no.
We do.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, especially when we have problems over here ourselves. You know, we got people, homeless people. We got people that that doesn't make a fair wage. They can't take care of their families or something. So, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and that was the voice, even though she has not been properly introduced, that was the voice of Betty Douglas, one of our guests here, to talk about what does it mean for Missouri families to have what they need economically. And so we're talking about none other than, you know, the proposition that's going to be on the ballot that is going to give a raise, but also give paid sick leave. And so the other person that's going to be helping us to understand that impact, what it means, is Richard Van Glund, who is with Missourians Jobs for Justice. He's been in this fight for a long time. We are co-conspirators on a number of these fights for workers, including the fight for 15, as has been Betty. And so, you know, Betty, you're going to be talking about your story, because you come from a big family, a family that had to work hard. You didn't do like the orange man. You didn't have that silver spoon be given to you.
No.
So you had to
not
work.
At all.
You had to work for it. So welcome to the show, Richard Van Glund and Betty Douglas.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's actually an honor to have both of you all, because this is a subject that's very dear to me. And Richard knows that every time we start working for living wages, there's always a backlash. And, you know, you're trying to figure out, why would somebody be opposed to workers making a livable wage so that they can have a decent lifestyle, so they can have a decent standard of living. But alas, here it is. So I'm going to start with you, Richard, because I think it's helpful for people to understand where these initiatives come from. They don't just drop out of the sky, and they just don't appear because some good politician thinks this is a good thing to do. These are people-led initiatives. And so talk about how this came into being, why there was two components to this, because that was kind of tricky. But why do we have two components to this, and what it took to get it on the ballot?
Yeah, thank you, Jamala, and thank you for having me. The simple answer is to where did this come from? I mean, this comes from, heroes of mine, leaders in our community, like Miss Betty Douglas. St. Louis was the third city that we saw the Fight for 15 launch over a decade ago, and we have seen workers demanding the dignity that they deserve for a long time, being out in the streets, telling their stories, lifting up their lived experiences. And for me personally and my organization, Missouri Jobs for Justice, when those workers first had the courage to step out, we made a promise to them that we would be there and we would fight and we would win. And it's taken us longer to get there than it should have, than it justly should have. But this campaign is really about fulfilling the promise that we made to Miss Betty and to so many others to really change what it is. And it's remarkable to me to know so many people who, when they first launched this demand and this campaign, people thought we were ridiculous. What is this demand? These are burger flippers or teenagers, and they didn't really know. And I've been so honored to get to know people like Miss Betty and her family and know what the impacts of these policies are. So, where it comes from isn't, a fancy economic analysis or report out of a university professor. It comes from the lived experiences of members of our community and their demand and their voice and our commitment to those workers. I'll add the second piece of your question about paid sick leave. This initiative, Missouri's voted on a minimum wage initiative successfully twice before, but you're right, Jamala, that this initiative will raise the minimum wage to $15, but it also protects that minimum wage by providing workers with up to 7 paid sick days a year. And that's because we know everybody gets sick. And for many workers, especially lower wage workers, they don't have access to paid sick days. So if you raise the minimum wage, but then you've got to take unpaid days to care for your health or for your loved one's health, we're not really addressing the full scope of the problem. And so we're sort of committed to looking at total compensation and what do we need to have a family supporting economy. And that means both a minimum wage and paid sick days that can protect our wages in case of illness.
And before we bring Betty on, I do also want you to talk about the mechanics and the organizing that has to go into getting a ballot on an initiative on the ballot. Because when I think about, for example, when we worked together to bring expand Medicaid, that was an issue that the Republican legislature had denied year after year, millions of dollars, going back to the feds because they didn't think it was a good policy for Missouri families. Folks had to organize to get that on the ballot. And even when it was on the ballot, there were court challenges. So I want people to get an understanding of the work that it takes to even get it on the ballot. And so you've been a part of a number of those things as the political director of JWJ. And so this is how we empower ourselves and also talk about the attack even on the ballot initiative process.
Yeah, it's truly amazing the work that was done to get this issue on the ballot. We had nearly 900 people volunteer their time to gather over 210,000 signatures from every single county in this state. When you think about 210,000 signatures, I've been doing signature collecting and working on petitions a long time. I mean, it's not easy. And, someone who's pretty well trained and knows how to do it can usually get about 10 signatures an hour. So you think 210,000 signatures, that's 21,000 hours of sweat equity that workers and leaders, people like Miss Betty, have put into this campaign just to put it on the ballot, to even give us a chance to vote on it. And that is simply because the legislature, there have been bills that have been filed to do these policies, and the legislature in Jefferson City, much like Medicaid expansion, won't even hear the bill. They won't even schedule it for a hearing and think about the benefit that this would have to our community. So workers have taken it upon ourselves to do this tremendous amount of labor to put this on the ballot. All along that we've been doing that, we have built a broad coalition. There's over 135 community organizations, labor unions, pediatricians, churches, faith groups, community groups, civil rights groups, women's groups, child welfare groups that all see the benefit of this policy. And so they've joined and supported our campaign and are calling for Proposition A to be passed in November.
It's their, issue as well. And I think, for Betty, who is a worker, has been there in one of those low rung jobs at fast food, joined the fight for 15. She's a mother, a grandmother. Betty, how dear is this proposition to you and your family?
Well, it's very dear. I'm a mother, and I'm an aunt, I'm a grandmother, and this is something for all. I'm not fighting for me. I'm fighting for the future. I'm fighting for my grandkids, nieces, nephews, friends, their kids. We need a change. And so it's a fight that needs to be fought. Everybody deserves to live and be able to take care of their families. And it's really sad. And it's hard when you have to make a decision whether to pay a bill or buy groceries. Or if you're sick or someone in your family is sick, to be able to, it's something simple as being able to buy medicine and stuff like that. It costs, just your necessities. Not only bills, and everything's going up, but our paycheck. And I've been working for a long time. I'm 68 years old, and I've been working for it since I was 12. And we can do the math. I've been out here working hard. Mm-hmm. And we all deserve that. Why would you take people? Respect. You have to respect everyone. I don't care what type of job they have. You have to respect them. And everybody deserves to be able to take care of their family. And that's why I'm out here fighting so hard, because it's a necessity. It's something we gotta change.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking about when we first started the fight for 15, and people thought it was only about fast food workers, but it was really about all of those folks who were at that bottom rung, whether they be in healthcare, the fast food industry. And I remember people saying, wait a minute, $15 an hour for somebody flipping burgers? And, so we had to prepare for responding to that. I remember one person that was a secretary, she said, I only made $8 an hour. And I'm thinking, you know, basically I said to her, well, if we raise the wage, you're gonna benefit too.
Exactly. Put you in a better position,
And so when I think about you, Betty, who was riding two buses to work to quote flip burgers.
I was traveling longer than I was working because they would only let me work 4 hours, and I had to go all the way across town. So I'm traveling at least 4 hours, and then I'm only working 4 hours. I mean, do the math. And then I wasn't making nothing like, what, $7 an hour? But, you know, you do what you have to do. I had lost my mother. My father was passing away. I had a son that had a brain tumor. I have a son with ADHD. I mean, and a lot of things fell on me. And, you know, when you backed up against the wall, you do what you have to do. And that's the way I was taught. So, and a lot of people were trying to discourage me and tell me, oh, no, that's just too far. And see, the funny thing is McDonald's wouldn't even hire me when I was in high school. All the times I tried to get a job with McDonald's, but when I was in high school, they never would hire me. But as soon as I got grown, they hired me, and we wasn't making any money. And everybody, like you said, when they think you're just whipping burgers, but they don't realize how many people come and buy those burgers. Mm. See, it's not just like a real medium job. Mm. This is something that, this is a $1 billion company.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And how many billions do you need in order to fail? I don't know, because I never had one. I don't know. But it's just to me, it's just was ridiculous. And everybody wants to say, oh, it's a medium job. No, it's a job. It pays your bills. It takes care of your family. So, you know, you can't. And then look at how many other people, not only fast food, but like you said, healthcare, airport workers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, we all need to be able to take care of our family. So we have to look at things in a different way.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, for example, when you talked about the number of, you know, the expense, the transportation expense just to get to work, and then you only work 4 hours. This was one of the little tactics they used so they wouldn't have to pay benefits to, you know, and so.
Exactly.
And so what you have here is, you know, almost a sum zero of the expenses of getting to work and then what you get and what's going to be left over. So this to me was such a compelling reason to support the Fight for 15, but the Fight for 15 for me, and you can chime in here too, Richard. I want it to be to the point where that minimum wage increases with inflation. Because here we are 10 years later, the fight for 15 is demand now. We need to be fighting for 25, like the Amazon workers. When will we get to the point that that's going to increase automatically so that workers and families can keep up with the inflation?
And it's so crazy because when you go to the grocery store, I know myself, I've got my youngest son is 22, and he eats like a horse. And that's the one with ADHD. He eats like a horse. So when I go to grocery, it seems like I'm getting, for what I was getting before, I'm paying double for. And it's, you know, like electric company. Everything is going up on our paycheck. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, everybody deserves to live, family. Everybody should be able to pay their bills and not stress out. And that's what makes me fight really hard because it's been unfair so long. And I know it's time to balance things out. It really is. It's time for us to take care of one another and be right. Treat each other right, you know. They have the same bill. Everybody has the same bill. You need electric, gas, you need all those things, but they're starting going up. And these are $1 billion companies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then people like me, we can't even afford to, my gas is off right now, you know? So I have to make a choice. What, am I going to pay my gas bill or am I going to pay my electric bill? And it's just, and in America here, it's just sad. It shouldn't be that way.
And Betty,
it's not like I don't,
yeah, it makes me think about when people talk about folks working, I'm talking about working hard at those jobs. These are not like, you know, easy jobs. These are labor, manual labor job. How can you work one, maybe two jobs and still not be able to meet your basic needs, including a home? There are some people that are unhoused. They are homeless because they're working, but they don't make enough to even pay rent. Now, that's a sad commentary on this country.
It is. And also, you know, it's really sad when you, when time comes in for your family? You have kids that you have to raise. And a lot of times, if they don't have any parent or someone to guide them in the right direction, that's why we have a lot of crime. They got too much time on their hands. So, I mean, you know, your job is never done. Mm-hmm. And you have to have time out for your family, too. You do. You can't just work just to pay the bills. You know, you got to raise your children. You got to teach them right and wrong. You got to make sure they're not out here robbing people. They're not out here stealing. They're not out here. You know, you got to raise mm-hmm. your children. Mm-hmm. So where does that time come in?
Yeah.
If you have to have two or three jobs in order to feed them and take care of them, where does the time come in that they need that one-on-one on you? And you're only human.
Yeah.
You know.
So and Daddy, I'm also thinking about what about wanting to just be involved in your neighborhood. You don't have time for that because the extra time that you have, you want to spend it on your children, right?
Exactly. And then you got to take time out for rent. Mm-hmm. And that's you have to have time for rent. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't see why it's so complicated, you know, where people can't understand that everybody deserves to be able to take care of their families and not work. My mother worked herself to death. Mm. My mother worked herself to death. And it's just, and that's another reason that gave me that I'm going to fight because no one should have to work and until they fall out and die. Mm.
And sometimes on the job, literally on the job.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. And it's just that I've been to different places in the world. I've been to Denmark. And they everybody starts off working at $17 an hour. They get free health care. They have, and they make them take PTO time. Mm. So, you know, if they can do it, why can't we?
Right, right. So, Richard, what do you think is going to take for us to get to a point where we have a minimum wage that grows and meets the inflation? What would we have to do to convince people that that needs to be a part of any legislation or any, you know, law that gets passed? Because otherwise we start this all over again in you know, maybe 4 or 5 years, raise the minimum wage, because now that wage is outdated. It doesn't even get you where it's really poverty wages at this point.
It really is.
That is an important component of Proposition A. It is indexed to inflation, so the minimum wage, after it gets to $15 by 2026, will continue to go up at the rate of inflation. But it's important, you know, where you start is really important to think about keeping up with minimum wage. Because if you start at a poverty wage and you're adjusting with inflation, all that does is you're going to still stay in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why, you know, we really work to make sure that we can get up to $15, which is still not enough, but is closer to a living wage. I think people need to understand, you know, when I ask people, what do you think a full-time minimum wage worker makes? People have the perception that, well, if you're working full-time, you're probably making $800-$900 a week, you know, because you're working full-time.
Mm.
And I tell them, a full-time minimum wage worker makes $492 a week before any taxes or anything else. $492. And when you explain to someone, this is what a full-time worker is making, then it becomes real clear.
Mm.
Well, that just isn't enough to survive. I said, no, of course it's not. It's not enough to survive in any county in the state.
Mm.
And then when you consider that as many as 1 in 3 Missourians have no access to paid sick days, everybody gets sick. through no fault of their own. It's flu season, you know, whatever's going on. And so even that low wage that they're getting isn't protected, because when they get sick, they're going to have to take time off work. And so the real wage that people are talking about is even lower. And that's why it's so important that both minimum wage and paid sick days were part of this. It was interesting when I was thinking about, you know, we've been through this pandemic, and when you were talking about, well, who are the people that this is impacting? You know, it is the very people that we just described as essential. It's very funny to me that the workers that we needed when the pandemic was raging, construction workers, nursing home workers, childcare workers, retail, food service workers, ambulance drivers, you know, those are the very workers that we call essential, but are also making less than $15 an hour and often don't have access to paid sick days. You didn't hear people saying, you know, what's essential in the pandemic is, you know, 6-7-figure attorneys other things. Mm. But yet those are the people that get compensated the most and almost universally have access to paid sick time. So it's funny to me, you know, it feels upside down.
Like, absolutely.
The workers who really drive and run our economy and frankly support all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a family. I need, you know, teachers to be well paid. I need childcare workers to have access to paid sick days. I might need nursing home workers to care for my parents.
Mm.
But those are the very workers that aren't valued in our economy.
And remember, Richard, during COVID, there was all this stuff about, like, the essential workers are our heroes. And I'm thinking, we'll pay them. They don't need accolades. They need some dollars. Okay.
They don't need a yard sign in your yard and we appreciate you.
Right.
They need some money on their check that they can feel appreciated.
Exactly.
And exactly.
Take care of their family.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
If you are just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we have two folks that are on the battlefield fighting for workers' rights, fighting for increases in workers' pay, fighting for dignity, and that is Richard Von Klein, who is with the Missouri Jobs for Justice, longtime labor organizer, and Betty Douglas, who herself is a recipient of what's going to happen when we pass Prop A on November 5th. So listen up, y'all. Here's the thing about this particular prop, and both of you all can speak to this. Just like we had to convince people during the fight for 15 when that was first launched about, like, who should get it, who, why. What I've noticed is that anytime we talk about raising the minimum wage, the opponents will bring out a small business person who will talk about the burden of such a proposition on them personally. Now, I get it. I know people who have small businesses. I get it. What is the response of you all, Betty and Richard, when you're on those doors and somebody says, well, shucks, you know, my aunt owns a little confectionery down there. My uncle owns a restaurant. He can't afford to pay sick leave. What are we telling people in response to that?
You know, part of our coalition is a group called Missouri Businesses for a Healthy Economy. It's over 500 businesses, almost all of whom you would consider small, you know, less than 10, 15, 20 employees, who have signed on and support this. Because they know that workers are what drive the economy. You know, when workers like Miss Betty get a paycheck, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, Miss Betty, but do you,
do you put that in a Cayman Islands offshore bank account? Go right back and spend that in your community. And put it right back into the economy. So when you actually invest in workers, when you support their full potential and their development, that is what drives economic growth. You know, we hear, I mean, we've spent 40 years talking about trickle-down economics. And, you know, well, maybe if we just give the rich more money, somehow that will come down to us. But guess what? You know, use your local example, the confectionery. You know, there's only so many, you know, pumpkin muffins that Elon Musk can eat. And it works a lot better if everybody can afford to get a pumpkin muffin and support your local business.
Exactly.
And so we see these businesses and we talk to these businesses, and what they really know is that when everybody is doing a little better, that supports everybody, including them. The businesses that come out and oppose this and use organizations like the Chamber of Commerce to do that, you know, these aren't the local mom-and-pop businesses. These are McDonald's. Mm-hmm. These are Burger King. Mm-hmm. These are places where executives are making $25 million a year and saying, but we can't possibly afford to pay someone a living wage. And so I just, you know, our experience and really what we have seen is we know when we invest in our neighbors that drives our collective economic success.
And I would also argue, and there's been, I'm sure this particular group that you're talking about has validated this. There's been a number of studies that show that when your employees are healthy, they're happy. And then that means they're going to be more productive. So, for example, right now, Betty is sick. She should be able to take a couple of days off and not have to worry, oh, my goodness, my paycheck is going to be short. She's got to get well before she goes back to work. And I know during COVID, we were, like, just horrified that companies were forcing employees to come to work in spite of the pandemic. That's why you had these places that became super spreaders, because we're like, y'all can't take off. Yeah, I know you might be sick, you might have some symptoms, but come on in anyway. And on top of that, you had employees who felt like they had to go to work because they couldn't afford a short check. So they knew that they were sick going in, but felt like they were no other choices. Here's something that's going to give people a choice. So, Betty, talk about what that looks like for somebody who thinks twice about taking off work. And I'm not talking about, I know some people abuse any kind of thing, but most workers, they will work like your mom till they die, and work while they're sick.
Exactly.
We are trying to eliminate that possibility so that people are not just healthy for the job, but healthy for their families, healthy for their communities, for their church. This is a reverberating reform that we're talking about, right?
That's correct. And that's so true. I was one of the people that had to work through the pandemic. I couldn't afford to take off. I mean, I couldn't say, "Well, oh no, I'm not going to go in." No, I had to go because, like I said, my bills were steady coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't getting no other compensation for it. I had a family. I had a father that was passing away. I had to take care of him, make sure that he was safe. I had to make sure my kids were taken care of. You know, I had to make sure the bills were paid. So I've been to work plenty of times to be sick. And that's terrible because most of the time when you go to work sick, you get other people sick.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just sad that this is something that we've got to have. We've got everyone deserves some type of PTO time where they like when you're sick, like I'm sick today. I've been canvassing. I had to take off today for a number of reasons. I don't want to make everybody else sick.
Mm.
And another thing I wanted to kind of backtrack on as far as everybody knows, the more money that you get, the more money that you get, the more you're going to take your families out to eat. So that's more money generated into the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, it could be a win-win for everyone. Mm. And I just had to throw that in there because a lot of people say, well, you know, yeah, the more everybody knows, look at tax time. Tax time goes, people buying TVs, cars, mm-hmm. you're gonna spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to realize that. And we need to build this, we need to build this country, Bob. We need to work together. And like I said before, how many billions of dollars? These are billion-dollar companies.
Mm-hmm.
How many billions does it take? Everybody can get a piece of the pie.
Absolutely.
And everybody, it could be a win-win. But we have so many greedy and selfish people, and they don't think that just because you're poor, you don't deserve to live. You don't deserve. And we all deserve to be treated fair. We all deserve to be able to take care of our families, pay our bills. We all deserve that.
We do, and I'm going to ask Richard to explain how the formula works with the paid leave. But I do want to say this also affects young parents who may be well and healthy, but who have kids in child care. You know, because nowadays your kid one cough and they put that kid outside the door and call you, say, come get your kid. He's sick. Because if that kid infects everybody else, they got a problem. So even though you might be well, you're going to get that call on your job to say, come get little Johnny. He's sick. You got to leave and you got to go home and stay with that child, even though you're not sick. So this particular bill is going to like deal with some of that. So for you, Richard, what is the formula that they're using in terms of the earned sick leave so that people understand that better?
Yep. So you earn 1 hour of paid sick leave for every 30 hours that you work. That formula applies equally to full-time workers as well as part-time workers. So, you know, part-time workers might earn it not as quickly, but they still earn it as well in that same formula. And you bring up a critically important point, that this is paid sick time not just for you, but it is for that you can use for yourself or a loved one. And someone that you have a caretaking responsibility for. And sometimes employers have real strict limits on what defines, you know, well, you can use it for you or your children. But you might have a cousin that lives with you that you have a caregiving responsibility for. And we don't think an employer should be able to define who your loved ones are, mm-hmm. and who makes up a member of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really tried to have a definition that allows you to take care of anyone that you have a caregiving relationship for. And, you know, my wife has been an early childhood educator for 20 years, and she has talked about, you know, knowing families that probably don't have access to paid sick time. They bring a kid in the morning, and she can look at that child in the morning and say, this child should not be here. And she has told me about, you know, the parents would sort of look at them, pleading with their eyes, saying, if you tell me I have to take care of this child, I will do so. But that means I can't afford the electric bill at the end of the month.
Mm.
And that's just a horrible decision.
Mm.
I have heard stories of workers talking about how they haven't been able to stay and care for a child or a loved one because, you know, mom or dad have got to go to work because they got to put food on the table. And their child wondering, well, why aren't you here to care for me?
Mm.
And that parent saying, it made me feel like a failure.
Mm.
Yeah.
Child.
Mm.
I mean, that is atrocious. And no parent should have to decide between putting food on the table and being the love and support that your child or other loved one needs in a time of illness or in a time of crisis.
And I'm wondering too, Richard and Betty, about the notion of, and I've had a couple of questions to this effect, I don't think that's going to be a good deal for me because I already have paid sick leave that's better than that. And I'm thinking, okay, this is an issue then that doesn't affect you. So clarify for the listening audience who this is for. If you already have a good paid leave benefit, what does it do for that? Does it supersede it? Does it, what? What happens?
When someone says that to me, this is what I tell them. I say, well, so you know how important it is to have that time to be able to, you know how important this is to have that time to be able to take care of your family or be able to take off. So, you know, you've got to open your mind and think not only for yourself, but you have to think about how important this is. That just think if you didn't have it, then what? You know, so you can't just think of yourself. You got to think about how important that this is for you, so you know how important it will be for other, for everyone else.
And Richard, for folks who have existing plans, what do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, so this is about establishing a right and the basic floor. So you might have an existing plan, but maybe it limits who you can use paid sick leave to care for. So maybe there are expansions here. This law would prohibit an employer from requiring you to get a doctor's note unless you're out for 3 or more days. You know, sometimes workers, you wake up, you just know you're not feeling well, but you've got a $40 copay to go to the office. Well, if your employer says you have to prove to me that you're sick, and spend $40 to do it, well, that's not really that helpful either. So there are some provisions that might just enhance a little bit as to the rights that you already have at work. But the other thing I would say to people is estimates are that as many as 1 in 3 Missouri workers don't have access to paid sick leave. Those are workers who are working in our nursing homes, caring for our parents, our child care centers, caring for our children. Some of the workers stocking our shelves, preparing our meals. Don't we want a healthy state? Don't we all live in a communal state? And the reality is there's 19 other states that have paid sick leave requirements. And when you look at those states, they have a lower spread of infectious disease, like the flu. They have lower worker compensation claims because you know your coworker at work is there, you know, fully attentive because they're feeling well, and there's not going to be as many accidents on the job. These are the sort of communal benefits that even if this doesn't directly impact you, it's going to indirectly impact you because you want to live in a healthy community.
Well, I think one of the things that we don't do a better job at, and that is talking about the interconnectedness, talking about the value of community, because sometimes we get so individualistic, like, I can only think about my family. No. We are all in this together, and we are in neighborhoods that are going to either thrive or perish because of what we do collectively. And so I think for a proposition like this, for me, to even have to be on the ballot as opposed to our legislators and our civic leaders looking at this and say, hey, this would be a great thing to do. We just need to do it. And to your point, Betty, about going to another country, if we start comparing the worker status in the U.S., one of the richest countries in the world, with other countries who we work more, we are paid less, we die early. I mean, there's so many negatives about being a worker in the U.S. that some these folks need to be thinking, how do we raise the collective standard of living? How do we have healthy workers, happy workers, and how do we have folks who want to engage in the communities where they live? That, to me, is the ultimate goal.
We are one of the only countries that doesn't have any protection for paid time off for any workers for any reason.
Yeah.
We are a country that know, one Jobs with Justice member from Columbia, Missouri, tells me a story about a coworker who gave birth and was at work the next day.
Wow.
The
next day. Because she got a family that she has to feed. I mean, there is no one. There is no pediatrician. There is no one who said that that is a good and healthy outcome for a parent or a child. Mm. And if it's not good or healthy for our citizens, then why do we make them do it?
Mm.
Exactly.
It's such an easy fix. It's such an easy fix. And I'm excited that we're going to fix it in this state in less than 3 weeks.
Mm. All right.
Yeah. And people, and people have to, what I always say, have in their mind, if it's not them personally, who is this going to benefit from this particular ballot initiative? And I'm thinking, if you say one out of three folks don't even have it, that's the majority of people, you know, that we probably know. I don't know rich folks in my circle of friends. So most of my friends are going to benefit from this. So it's up to us, y'all, to get as much information as we can. Not so much, not only about this ballot initiative, but about all the ballot initiatives on November 5th, so that we go there fully prepared and informed, because our decisions will affect generations to come. I like the way you said it, Betty, like you fighting for your grandkids, your nephews, your nieces, you know, you came from a big family. Like, I think it was like 10 siblings.
Yeah.
So y'all got a small city right there. So yeah,
I really, I do. I really do. And it's just no excuse why we can't do better. We can't do better. Just like they told us that we were crazy to talk about 15. And so many states and cities that they got 15 because we got out there and we worked hard and we fought and we stood up for what we know is right. And that really, we just have to continue to do that. We have to just stand up. We can't sit back and if these politicians and these business owners, if they cannot do the job to make it where everyone can live comfortable, they don't need, as far as these politicians, they don't need to be in office. They have to be for everyone. You can't just be for a certain group of people or a certain community. We all live together. You know, everybody deserves to live fairly. So if you can't accommodate for everyone, you don't deserve this position. That's just how I feel.
But you know, you talked about the fight for 15 and how people thought we were crazy. And really, when I look back on that time, and it's over a decade ago, that why would that be so obscene,
crazy.
So crazy?
Yeah.
And really, I think we had to break it down to how much that would really be over a period of time. It still wasn't even, it still was poverty wages. And here, you know, luckily some forward thinking companies immediately did go to $12, $13, $15 an hour almost immediately. But it was a hard battle. And here we are with workers such as Amazon saying, no, we saying $25 an hour. And people looking at them like, what? To throw some boxes on? No, y'all, we need to understand what the minimal standard of living is in order to have a standard of living that is going to be healthy and holistic for you and your family. And I don't even think it's $25 an hour. Maybe you've computed it over there, Jobs with Justice, Richard. What would a minimum wage be to have a healthy lifestyle, a healthy standard of living where you got your basic needs met?
I mean, you know, the crazy thing, you know, I think you're probably right. It's probably closer to that $25 an hour when you really look at it. But the minimum wage in this country, I said earlier, you know, a minimum wage worker in Missouri makes less than $500 a week working full time. The minimum wage in this country, which hasn't gone up since President Obama was in office, a full-time worker working that makes just over $15,000 a year. $15,000 a year. That isn't
I mean, that's like below a poverty
rate. Yes, it is.
That is why you have seen so many states and so many municipalities fight to increase that, because that is the ridiculous thing. When you have a law like that, it's meaningless. It's meaningless. And that's really what, when we think about opposition and things to this, I was listening to the State Chamber of Commerce. They said they oppose any mandate on business, any mandate. They don't want paid sick days. They don't want minimum wages. They don't want child labor laws. They don't want health and safety inspections. And that is just, that is really a world where they are just saying, we want profit, profit, profit,
exactly.
And nothing else. And nothing else. But most people, most Missourians know that the economy works best with a set of guardrails around it. And some of those guardrails need to be that we want to have a healthy community, and some of those guardrails should be that hard work should lead to more than poverty.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. What would be your, in the few minutes left, Betty, to talk about folks who you might see on the bus, folks that you see at church, and I need, whatever you all are saying on the doors, we need to give that to folks so that they have some language when people are saying, well, I'm making good money, I don't need that. What are you all saying to people on the doors when you get a chance to talk to them?
Well, I'll tell them this. I'm like this. I'm happy to see that you are making good money. But just think if you wasn't making. Put yourself into the other people's position. And how would you know? I would tell them, just for a minute, just put yourself in another person's position that's not as fortunate as you are. And what would you do? How do you think that would make you feel? Because sometimes you can't always say that it's not all about me. That's part of our problem.
Mm-hmm.
We got to think about other people too, you know. And you're blessed to have a good job and you, with all type of benefits and making good money and everything. And I'm happy for you. But just think of the people that don't. And don't you think that everybody else deserves that also?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all deserve this. And so that's the kind of thing that I always, I kind of make people think about, you know, just put yourself in other people's shoes, you know, because it can so easily change.
Yeah.
You can be in the same position.
Exactly.
Nothing's profit, you know, and we all just one paycheck away from being homeless.
There you go.
So, yeah, and we got to think about that.
Yeah. I'm thinking about we have to work, even though these folks are trying to make it so they're eliminating jobs with the technology, with AI, but most of us will have to work. And we prefer to work with dignity. We prefer to get what we deserve in terms of wage. We prefer to work in safe and sanitary conditions. Why are we fighting for that in 2024 in the U.S. of A.? I mean, it's a picture that we need to change. We need to change.
Yes.
And I am happy to see folks like you out there on the battlefield and, you know, fighting. And I'm almost sure that on November 5th, we are going to be guaranteed a victory around this particular issue.
Yeah.
But we can't stop there because it's still not enough.
It's not, and we still got so many different things that needs to be changed. We've really gone backwards. In so many ways, all these politicians talk about making America great again. Well, you know, we can't just say it. We've got to act on it. Mm. We gotta make a change. We can't just say it and think that it's going to drop out of the sky. No, we've got to put our foot down. We've got to fight for what's right. And we have to do what we have to do to make this country great. Because I've been all over the world, and I've been a lot of places over the world. And I still love America. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But we've got to make some changes, and we got to be more We got to be more considerate for everyone. We can't just say that, oh, everything's great for me, so I don't have no, I forget about everybody else. We can't make this. We can cut down on crime. Mm-hmm. We've got generations that we have lost, mm-hmm. and it's not too late. I never feel like it's too late. Yeah. We've got to build our young people up and let them know that. I noticed that most young people, they don't want to vote. They don't even want to hear about voting, mm-hmm. because they're so discouraged. They mm-hmm. feel like there is just no hope.
Yeah.
And that really scares me.
Yeah, well, like they'll say, y'all voted for this and voted for that, and we still doing this. We still got living the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we've lost generations, and we gotta hurry up and make some changes and let these young people know, your vote do count. Mm. What you feel, you are important, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Because I notice a lot of our young people, they don't think that they're important. They don't think that what they think means anything. We're just losing generations and generations, and which we should be getting better. We're getting worse because everybody's discouraged. Mm. We got to build these communities up. We got to make it work, that, you know, motivate. We got to motivate these young people because they're our future.
Right.
So, yeah, they're our future. So we got to all work together. And I don't care who you are, what color you are. I don't care. You could be green. We need to love on each other, work with each other, and it can happen. Mm. It can be done. And I truly feel that. It can be done.
Yeah, we got to be examples ourselves, and that is hard
that
to
also.
Do, I tell you.
That also, yeah.
Richard Roglan and Betty Douglas, thank you for stopping by, talking about this important issue. We want people to get their voting plan together and to remember that this is not a singular issue. This is going to affect Missouri families.
Everyone.
Yeah. And so... So we do thank you for coming by, and we know that the work is not done. You're going to be out there as soon as you get rid of that cough and get your strip back. Then you're going to be back out there.
I'm going to look like a snowman tomorrow, but I'll probably be out there tomorrow knocking on somebody's door, and I do not care. And I really want to thank you guys for letting me speak how I feel and to express how I feel and give me the opportunity to you know, we got to make it better. I refuse to take. Yeah, it might take time, but it's gonna happen.
Yes.
And I really thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to express how I feel and put my two city and to also get out here and work. Because like I said, I'm trying to figure out a way. I think I'm just going to put me some low jobs on tomorrow.
Mm.
And I'm going out there because we are crunch time.
Right.
Are crunch time, yeah.
So I you know, just want to let people know that this episode will be up on my website, JamalaRogers.com, tomorrow. And if you missed certain pieces of it, you didn't get it all in, and you need to get some of those nuggets so that you can talk to other people about it, go to the website.
Uh-huh.
Next week, we have, speaking of young people, Miss Betty, we got some young people who were part of the Central Vision and Performing Arts shooting that still feel like their voices are not heard. They're going to be with me next week. This is the second, year since that. And many of us feel like the district, the community has not done enough for these young people who were traumatized that day. And so this will be an important kind of show for people who believe that, you know, once the shooter was shot and things, business as usual, but these young people will tell you it is not. They are still suffering. Still suffering.
Oh, yes, they are.
So,
trauma.
Yeah, that was definitely trauma. So,
trauma. I mean, you know, just to see or experience or even be around something like that. And that's what I'm talking about. We've got to love on one another, help one another. And, you know, it's enough for all of us.
Absolutely.
And then we got to care about each other. That kind of trauma, you can't imagine it until it happens to you. Once it happens to you, then it's a whole different situation.
It is.
So,
it is.
Yeah.
So thank you for all your wisdom and all that you're doing. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.
Thank you.